Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Francine Foss. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Foss is a Professor of Medical Oncology and Dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Francine welcomes Judy Jones. Judy is the director of the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation and is also a survivor of the disease.
Judy, can you start our listeners off by explaining to them what is the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation?
Well, the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation is an organization that was formed to just deal specifically for cutaneous lymphomas. There's a lot of other cancer organizations, but our patients have trouble identifying with those different treatments. And so that's why we are very specific.
So you founded this organization. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, when I was first diagnosed, I had nobody to talk to and nobody that knew anything about this disease. And it was very, very lonely. So I got on the internet and tried to find a couple of other people to talk to. And just one thing led to another. And then we formed the foundation.
So cutaneous T-cell lymphoma is a very rare disease. Can you tell our audience a little bit about how rare it is compared to other kinds of lymphomas or cancers?
There are only 10% of lymphomas are T-cell lymphomas, and only about 2% of those are cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. There are probably about 1,500 new cases diagnosed every year.
So there are other foundations like the Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation, for instance. Were they helpful to you as a patient, or did you just not find enough information that pertained to you?
Well, since they handle all of the different lymphomas and leukemias, there wasn't that much information on cutaneous lymphoma because it is so rare.
So you started this whole thing out as a patient with a disease. Was it difficult for you as a patient to find the right doctors to get the right treatment for your disease, given that it was a rare kind of cancer?
I happen to be very fortunate because I was near a major cancer center that actually had a clinic in cutaneous lymphoma. Most people are not that fortunate. And most people, well, it actually took me about a year and a half before I got to that place because I was misdiagnosed several times. Now with the internet, we are able to post information on the clinical centers that specialize, and patients are able to get to them a lot easier.
So can you take us through the steps that went through your mind as a cancer patient that led you up to the point where you actually got up enough energy to put together this foundation?
Well, the first thing hurdle that I had to get over was the fact that I probably wasn't going to die. Getting a diagnosis of cancer is really scary. And then I had to go through several treatments before I could finally get it under control. And then once I got it under control, I thought, gee, you know, I wish that I had had some of this information a lot sooner. And then I wanted to make sure that other patients didn't have to go through the long period that I did with no information.
So what was the first step in terms of actually starting a foundation?
I started a listserv, which is an online support group. And all I was doing was getting patients together for support. Then a doctor found out about it, Dr. Stuart Lesson, and he called me and he said, you need to start a foundation. I did not know what I was doing at the time, but I figured out how to start a foundation. I learned about nonprofit. I learned about the medical community, and it just has grown much, much faster and much larger than I had ever imagined.
So, Judy, did you have any special background in business or in other areas that would have helped you in terms of starting this whole effort up with the foundation?
I do have a counseling background, and that has helped me talk to patients and understand a little bit more about what their emotional needs are.
So when you started the listserv, how many patients found out about it and how quickly?
In the first month, we had 10. And then this was very early on. This is about 15 years ago, before we had a lot of the Yahoo groups, and it's much easier to get on the internet right now. Currently, we have over 1,000 members on this listserv sharing their experiences from about 26 different countries.
So this all started out with a listserv, and then it came to the attention of Dr. Lesson, who said, let's get a foundation going. What were the next steps?
Trying to figure out how to learn the nonprofit system, and that's where the business part came in. And I knew that if I was going to start this, I wanted to do it the right way and make sure that we were following all of the rules and regulations that we had to. And so it was kind of like going back to school and getting a new degree.
So you did all of this yourself?
Yes.
What would you recommend to other people out there who are listening to this saying, wow, I can't believe she did all this nowadays? How would you recommend that a patient who's interested in this kind of thing, you know, step into this arena? Do they need legal help? Do they need others to get involved with them? Or is this something that somebody can really do by themselves?
If anybody is interested in starting a nonprofit, what they really need to do is find out who else is doing something similar and talk to them and find a mentor. I was able to talk to Vicky Kalabokas, who was heading up alopecia areata, and Gail Zimmerman, that was heading up the Psoriasis Foundation, and they gave me step-by-step instructions on what I had to do to make sure that I was going down the right path.
So are you now partnering with the other organizations like Lymphoma Research Foundation and the Leukemia Lymphoma Foundation?
Yes, we belong to the Skin Disease Coalition, which is a group of several different skin disease organizations, and we work with them to on a lot of things. And then we also work with the Lymphoma Research Foundation to do a lot of educational programs. When they have a lymphoma workshop, they will call us, and we will give them the names of the physicians for a specific breakout in cutaneous lymphoma.
So one of the things that you've done with your foundation, Judy, is that you've really been able to successfully network physicians and nurse practitioners and ancillary personnel who are treating this disease from across the country and even now across the world. So can you talk a little bit about that process?
Well, being a small organization, there is no way that, I can't march up to Congress and say, I want some money for cutaneous lymphoma, because they wouldn't listen to me. But I can collaborate with the other organizations, and I can lobby for additional research money for skin diseases. I can lobby for additional money for blood diseases. And obviously, lately with the health reform, I am very interested in making sure that the rare diseases do not get left behind.
Can you just, for our listeners, can you just define what is a rare disease? You know, how does Congress look at a rare disease versus something like lung cancer?
A rare disease is one that has less than 30,000 people.
So are there specific initiatives at this point at the level of the federal government, the NIH, or Congress to address rare diseases like this?
Yes. The National Institutes of Health are very aware of the rare diseases and the different issues that they have. There are a couple of new programs that have just started up to facilitate research in rare diseases.
So is that research mostly basic research or clinical, or does it straddle between the two?
The new program that has started is for basic research. And I think that basic research is where a lot of the answers are going to come that are going to benefit many diseases, not just ours.
What about the whole issue of patients and patient support for patients who have rare diseases like yourself, who don't understand much about them, and it's really hard to get that information? Are there support networks that are building up now around rare diseases?
Yes. There are. There's the Genetic Alliance for Genetic Diseases. There is the NORD, National Organization of Rare Diseases. And then there are the organizations like ours that are very specific for one particular disease.
So are there organizations which bring all of these rare diseases together under one umbrella? Or are they pretty much still independent organizations? And do you think there would be any benefit to that?
Well, the more that we can work together, the stronger that we can be. And I do work with NORD, and I do work with the Genetic Alliance on different issues that come up over the rare diseases.
Can we take a giant step back now and talk a little bit about you, Judy? You had this rare cancer, and you got treated. Did you get chemotherapy?
No, I did not get chemotherapy. Most of our first-line treatments would be skin-directed, and that's where I started out with phototherapy, and I had, which is called PUVA, and that worked for a while, but then didn't work. I went to interferon. I went to a topical nitrogen mustard. And all of these I responded to for a short period of time, but it did not last. And so I ended up going into a clinical trial.
So one of the first things that you said when we started the program is that when you figured out that you weren't going to die from this cancer, you decided to start a foundation. So from the point of view of a patient, you know, when do you make that decision? When do you realize I'm not going to die from this cancer? I mean, how difficult is it to make that transition from the initial shock of finding out that you have cancer?
Well, that's a really good question. It's one of those that it's a process. And I did have some, I did go in and talk to a counselor because I was spending my life I was not living my life at that point because I was waiting to die, and it was not a fun position to be in. And so I decided that I had to learn how to live every day so my life would mean something.
Well, you certainly have taken it a long way from there, Judy, getting to the point you are at now with this foundation. We're going to take a break now and then come back and talk a little bit more to Judy. You're listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and we're here discussing advocacy and the Cutaneous T-Cell Lymphoma Foundation with Judy Jones.
Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. About 3,000 women in Connecticut will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and new therapies are providing more options for breast cancer patients, and more women are able to live with breast cancer than ever before. Beginning at age 40, every woman should schedule an annual mammogram, and you should start even sooner if you have a risk factor associated with breast cancer. Screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle are the most important factors in defeating breast cancer. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to make new treatments not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Francine Foss, and I am joined by Judy Jones, the Executive Director of the Cutaneous Lymphoma Foundation. So, Judy, before the break, I made the mistake of calling it the Cutaneous T-Cell Lymphoma Foundation, and that's because I know that originally that's how it started off, and since then it's evolved. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we started out being very specific and called it the Mycosis Fungoides Foundation because that was a subset of the T-cell lymphoma. And then we realized that we were actually serving patients that had more T-cell lymphomas, and so we thought, okay, well, maybe we should call it the T-cell lymphoma. And then we realized that there were a greater number of people that had cutaneous lymphomas that were not T-cell, that we have B-cells. So we changed the name of the organization to cover all cutaneous lymphomas because they are all very, very rare and all treated similarly.
So how has the foundation changed over the last 5 years from the very nascent group that you put together from the listserv to where we are today?
When we first started, we were only interested in giving support to patients. And that evolved into providing education. We have a website that has a tremendous amount of information on now. We have a medical advisory board that goes over this information on a yearly basis to make sure that it is accurate and up to date. Then we also realized that there were a lot of physicians out there that were not working in academic centers and only maybe saw one person with cutaneous lymphoma in 10 years. So we had to get information out to them as to how to treat this disease.
And most recently, Judy, a real feather in your cap, I would say, is that you just came back from New York City after having conducted the first Cutaneous Lymphoma Summit, which was really sponsored by you and your foundation. Can you talk about that?
That was
It
was a really exciting weekend. This disease is treated by both dermatologists and oncologists, and radiation oncologists. And a lot of times it's hard to get the different disciplines together to share information on how the disease is treated. So I wanted to get them all together and answer some questions in this conference. What I wanted to know is, what do we know about the disease, what we don't know about the disease, and where do we have to go to put all of this information together? So from this summit, we hope to put together a roadmap that will show us which path we have to take to fund research and move the understanding of this disease forward.
And having just participated in that summit, Judy, I just want to let our audience know that this was a summit for both patients and physicians, and that we had the world's experts in cutaneous lymphoma, not only from the United States, but also from overseas as well, attending this summit. And it really was a multimodality approach, and I think that's an important point you made, Judy. And we talk oftentimes on this show about approaching cancer from more than one point of view. So in addition to having the physicians there, you also had a component for caregivers and for the nurses who are taking care of these patients. Can you elaborate a little bit about that part of it?
It's really interesting to get everybody together. Patients are just amazed when they see all of these physicians in one room. A lot of times patients think that the only thing that their physicians do is see patients. And it's good for them to know that they're out there doing research, they're out there sharing information with their colleagues, and they are really working to provide better treatment for the patients.
It was also important to us as physicians to hear from patients about how interested they are in clinical research and how much they really want to be a part of that whole process.
Yes, I think that patients are willing to participate in clinical trials if they know about them. And we really need to get more information out about clinical trials and how important they are.
So, Judy, are you excited about some of the new drugs that have been developed for cutaneous lymphomas?
I'm very excited. When I was first diagnosed, one new drug was approved, and it had been 10 years since a drug had been approved for this disease. A year later, another one was approved, and it was 7 years until another one was approved. This past month, we have had two new treatments approved, and there are several things down in the pipeline right now. So the research has accelerated.
And I think a lot of that really has to do with organizations like yours who provide advocacy, say, to the FDA, as well as to drug companies who have drugs, to really push them to develop those drugs for orphan diseases. Because, as you know, there isn't a huge amount of profit for some of these companies to develop a drug that has a small number of patients out there who are going to benefit from that drug.
It is extremely expensive to develop a drug. And it takes a long time. The most recent drug that was approved, I had been following it for 10 years, and I know that it had been in research even longer than that. And 10 years is a long time, and you can imagine the millions of dollars that it has taken to bring that drug to market.
As you think about that now and all the work that you've done with the foundation, do you really feel that foundations like yours should play a stronger role in lobbying with the FDA and with Congress in general about the development of drugs for these rare diseases?
Yes, I really think so. When I first started, I was obviously very naive and only interested in patient education. But you really have to look at the bigger picture, and it's looking toward the future. It's something that these things are not going to happen overnight.
Another thing about Judy is that I've seen her. I can't tell you how many airports I've been in around the country where I've seen Judy with her bags. Judy, you've really taken this organization from the ground up, and I think the success of an organization like this is all in the networking and getting the word out there, disseminating information and pulling people together. And you've been able to do that successfully, but it's certainly been a huge effort for you.
Well, sometimes I do feel like a bag lady. I have my computer and my entire office in a backpack, and it goes with me wherever I go.
And I understand that you're not even really paid to do this, that this is still voluntary on your part?
Yes, it is. When I first started, we had no money, and I thought, okay, if I get to a certain level, I will be really excited because most nonprofits do not ever get to the $100,000 level. And then once we got there, there was so much to do that I was not going to take a salary because that would take away from patient services. And I guess I'm still there today.
Do you think that your dedication to this foundation has a lot to do with the fact that you were a patient as opposed to, say, other foundations that may be started by interest groups but not people who are particularly patients?
Well, patients definitely have a passion. It's something that I wanted to get this information because it's something that I didn't have at the beginning. And the more information I get, it's like, oh, well, we got this much. What else can we do now? And how can we, get more information out?
Another thing that this foundation has done for those of us who are clinical doctors treating the disease is it's really pulled us together to develop what you call a roadmap. And among other things, we are now getting together as a group of physicians in the United States under another foundation, the United help me with this, Judy, the USCCL.
United States
United
Consortium States of Clinical
Consortium
Trials.
For Cutaneous Lymphoma.
Yeah, we'll get it together.
Which is a group that's really been founded in part by Judy pushing us all to get together to think about rational designs for clinical trials and to get multiple sites involved in doing the same trials as opposed to having individual sites doing their own thing, thereby hopefully standardizing care for patients across the country.
I sometimes feel like I'm the person who's just poking you and trying to push you forward. Physicians are so busy, and it's hard for them to spend as much time as I would like them to spend. But it's the physicians are so dedicated. And I just have seen, I have seen these physicians work so many hours on weekends. And I think my job is just to, how can we make it easier? How can we get you together so you can do your work?
At this point, from the point of view of a patient, and you certainly have talked to many, many patients out there, what are the most important things from the point of view of a patient?
Well, the first thing in this disease, there's a lot of itching. I would say number one is please stop the itch.
We certainly wish we could do that, but I think that's still one of the banes of our existence with this disease.
And I think that patients, when they're really sick and they do have symptoms, it's that's their main focus. They need support. They need to know that somebody else is out there. And they need to know that their doctors are working on finding better treatments.
I think there are two aspects to this disease also. It's a chronic disease for a lot of patients, but it also is a fatal disease. It can be a very aggressive disease in other situations. So certainly there's a different point of view on the part of a patient who has a chronic disease, I would presume, than a patient who has the more rapidly progressive form of the disease.
I think that patients need to know which form of the disease they have. And the patients that have the more chronic disease need to know that. And there is that psychological part of it that is always in the back of your mind that is this going to get worse?
So, Judy, you've done tremendous, tremendous work over the last couple of years. Can you just tell us in the last minute what's next for your foundation? And what's next for Judy Jones?
I just keep working, and hopefully we will be able to build on what we did this past weekend at the summit and push research ahead in this disease.
And we're really looking forward to seeing what happens next, Judy. Thank you very much for being on our show today. You've been listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'd like to thank my guest, Judy Jones, for joining me today. Till next time, this is Dr. Francine Foss from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and happy week.
If you have questions or would like to share your comments, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.